25 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, George Johnson. George covers the Flames for the Flames team website. George, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
No problem for you guys, anything.
We appreciate it, George.
Yeah, right.
George, the Flames and the Jets doing battle this afternoon in Calgary, the first meeting since very early on in the season where the Flames handled the Jets pretty easily. Of course, things have turned around for the Winnipeg Jets team since then. And this Flames team in the last, you know, seven games, certainly on fire, seven wins in a row, including a tremendous stick toss from head coach Glenn Gullitson. You know, did you see this hot stretch coming for the Flames? Were you of the opinion that they were better than the record had been prior to the seven-game winning streak?
Well, you know, I mean, they had been adamant that they had been playing some pretty good hockey, and they had. I mean, defensively, they'd shut it down a bit. Mike Smith was still playing very, very well in the net. They just weren't getting the results. I know it sounds cliched, but it's probably true. Seven games in a row, well, I mean, Smith's been great, winning six games. The big line, which was really cooled off in December after a torrid November, has 32 points in the seven games. And, you know, it's just little things and that has allowed them to win these seven games, which is, you know, three off the franchise record that they set last year. So, you know, would they have liked to have kept going during the mandated five-day break? Probably. But now the challenge, obviously, is just to pick it up and continue where they left off.
George, everybody knows that the Flames' two best players are Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan. Michael Ferland, as the third member of that top line, obviously, a resident of Swan River, Manitoba. Sorry, I shouldn't say resident. He was born in Swan River, Manitoba. A good Manitoba boy. Had a good year last year, scoring 15 goals. He's got 19 this year, and he's obviously got some pretty good line mates. But just how incredible, you know, has his goal-scoring prowess been this year for the Flames?
They've, you know, ever since he got here and he had that fantastic playoff, against Vancouver in the first round where he was driving Kevin Bieksa absolutely nuts, they've always maintained that he had one of the best shots on the team. I mean, just a big, heavy, hard shot. And with him, it's always been about consistency. I mean, was he going to be able to do it for 2 weeks instead of 1 week? Was he going to be able to do it for a month instead of, you know, a couple of weeks? Was, and he just seemed to drift in and out of it. He just seemed to drift in and out of relevance isn't the right word, but where he was really contributing and he was really noticeable. And over this season with 19 goals, as you said, he's pushing Monahan for the team lead. He's been way more consistent. And I mentioned that drop-off that the big line had in December. He was the best guy on the line. He was the guy carrying Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan during December. And, you know, I mean, that in itself speaks volumes when your line mates are struggling to produce offense and you're still doing it. I think he had four goals in the month. So he was still doing his job. It was up to the other two guys, which is something you never would have guessed, to pick up their games and match him.
You know, George, there's a tendency in today's day and age to blow things up, and the Glenn Gullitson stick toss heard around the world. You know, was watched over and over again.
Jim Rome for crying.
I was just well, that's what I was going to say. It even made Jim Rome. Are we making more significance of that than it deserves, or did that really kind of get the Flames' attention and get them going on this big streak?
I think we put too much into it. Yeah. Did it get their attention? Well, it sure got our attention. It's a good thing he fired it. He was smart enough and canny enough not to fire it over into the media section. He went over to the other side of the rink and wheeled it up there, hammer toss kind of style. But, you know, it's funny. I mean, you know, 2 years ago, in his first year in the with the Flames, he had a meltdown in Montreal. And he just went absolutely nuts after a game and called them all out and did this. And it's not like him, you know. I mean, if you guys have ever talked to Glenn, he's, you know, he's a measured kind of quiet, laid-back, studious type of guy. But he told us early on, he said, you know, I got an Irish mother, and my Irish mother didn't put up with much crap. You could push her so far, and then she kind of popped, he said, and that's me. And it was interesting, the timing on it, because they had just started to play pretty good. I mean, they had won a big game against Chicago on New Year's Eve, and, you know, and then all of a sudden he goes all Jim Playfair on us, right? And it was interesting, the timing and all of that. And I think there's way more calculation in it than anybody, you know, to think that he just suddenly decided he was going to chuck his stick with a whole bunch of media guys there, mm-hmm. standing there, cameras, and, you know, is a little bit, makes you a little bit naive, I think. But he certainly did get their attention, and it has got a lot of mileage.
He would have won over the dressing room if he had aimed it at the media there, George.
Well, you know, it depends. They're off and on with us, like I'm sure the Jets are off and on with you guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, like we've always said, you know, it's pretty easy. When you play well, we kiss you, you know, and when you don't, we kick you, you know, and we really don't have a lot of say in that. So.
It's very true. George Johnson is our guest. George covers the Calgary Flames for the Flames team website. George, I want to ask you about Sam Bennett. You know, his third full season now in the NHL. How much more, I mean, obviously he was, you know, a high draft pick, fourth overall, and it hasn't really ever fully come together for Sam Bennett. Sure, he's, you know, he had 18 goals in his rookie year, and there's nothing wrong with that, but, you know, it's been diminishing returns since then. Who is Sam Bennett as a player, and what is his ceiling? The Flames obviously hope he has more to give, but from your perspective, how much more is there in Sam Bennett's game?
Well, you know, again, I hearken back to Ferland. I mean, you know, some guys just develop later than other guys. I think they still think that there's a real upside in Sam Bennett. I mean, since he's been put on this line, and with Sam, it's always kind of been, is he going to play center, which is where he played in junior, or is he going to play on the wing? This has been an ongoing thing. You know, where is he going to play? Where are they going to put him? They've tried him at both. He seems to have found a home on the third line. With rookie Mark Jankowski, who's been really, really good, Red Kelly's great nephew, since they brought him up from Stockton, and another Stockton guy, Garnet Hathaway. And, you know, Hathaway's a truculent kind of no-nonsense, in-your-face, you know, grinning till you want to punch him kind of guy. And Jankowski's just this big sort of smooth centerman, and Bennett has fit in really well there. And that line has been really, really good most nights, if you talk to people that have been around the team for, you know, any length of time. So I think Sam Bennett, personally, I think he's still trying to figure out what kind of player he's going to be. I don't think he's ever going to be a 40-goal scorer. I might be wrong. But I think he's going to be, you know, he's kind of a junkyard dog guy, and he's in your face. Glenn has said, and Gullitson has said since the start of the year, you know, he said, in terms of competitiveness, he said, if I throw a puck on the ice with all our guys, he said, I'm betting that Sam Bennett is going to come out with most of them. That's the kind of player he is. So I don't know whether statistics, he's one of those guys, I don't know whether statistics, because he was fourth overall, highest pick in franchise history, everybody's expecting him to light it up like it's Times Square on New Year's Eve. I don't think that's ever going to happen, but I think he's going to be a really, really valuable piece moving forward. But again, like a lot of young guys, he has a lot of ups and downs, dips and curves, and that's what he has to iron out, before he's the type of player that he wants to be and they think he can be.
George, Dougie Hamilton is a defenseman I've always really liked, and I'm sure Glenn Gullitson really likes him as well. And, you know, some were wondering how Freddie Hamilton's departure was going to affect Dougie Hamilton. Of course, he was claimed on waivers back in early January by the Arizona Coyotes, and since then, he's gone on a 5-game point streak, which has included 4 goals and 2 assists. Are enough people outside of Calgary talking about how good of a season Dougie Hamilton's having?
Well, I mean, he had a great season last year. I mean, you know, as soon as they paired him with Mark Giordano, funny how that happens. People get paired with Mark Giordano and they start playing lights out, right? I mean, he's kind of that. He's kind of like Linus's security blanket in the Peanut comics, right? Giordano. He just everybody's. They gotta have him, right? He's just there, and they don't wanna leave him, kind of thing. But he had a great year last year. The Freddie Hamilton, Dougie Hamilton thing. Those guys. There's no question. Those guys were tight. I mean, they're brothers. They always came to the rink together. I'm sure Dougie thought it was fantastic that Freddie was here and. But at some point, you have to make decisions on players, and he's moved on. And I think a lot of people wondered how he react. I know I did. You know, how's Dougie gonna handle this? And you know, as you say, he's got the two game winners, and he's played very, very well since then. So maybe he's just trying to show us that we're all a bunch of idiots.
You know, George, Jaromir Jagr's time with the Calgary Flames appears to be at an end. Are you a little surprised at how things have gone for the 45-year-old this season?
It was always going to be an experiment. The guy's 45. I mean, I know that that's not. I mean, I just turned 60, and I get all these 30-year-olds telling me that 60 is the new 40. It's not. It's the old 60. And I'm sure for a hockey player, 45 is 60, right? I mean, it's amazing that he's even given it a shot, kind of thing. Am I surprised? Well, I think everybody's a little disappointed that. The injuries of, his groin, it's a hip, it's a knee, whatever it is, has slowed him down. And if you're around him at any, for any length of time, you can understand he's frustrated by the whole thing too. I think it's an experiment that they thought was certainly worth taking, adding a guy of that presence into the dressing room, especially for their younger players, Gaudreau and Monahan and all those guys. That he'd be really good, and he has been. Especially you mentioned Sam Bennett; he spent more time talking to Sam Bennett probably than anybody else. And of course, Sam is sitting there like me at the feet of the late Red Fisher. You're kind of going, "Wow," kind of thing. So I don't know whether I'm surprised that it's kind of come this way because he had no camp; he was trying to make this comeback. Gordie Howe's games record was in sight. I think we're all just a little disappointed that it hasn't gone more smoothly. And I have no idea what their plans or his plans are down the road.
George Johnson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. George covers the Flames for the Flames team website. George, how would you grade out Travis Hamonic in his first 41 games as a member of the Flames?
It's been sort of up and down for Travis. I mean, he spent his whole career on Long Island before he came here. Right away it was like, oh, well, Giordano and Hamilton are together. That's a pair. We know that. So who are we going to put with TJ Brody to make a really strong second pair, right? And so those guys have been, it's always almost like an arranged marriage. Somebody came over and it was like, you're marrying this guy, right? So... they were kind of stuck together at the beginning, and we just expected magic to happen because Hamonic's a hard-edged, kind of no-nonsense guy, and Brody's the guy that, skates on a hovercraft, and he's over top of the ice and all that kind of stuff. And we just saw it as a perfect pairing. But I think, in truth, any kind of marriage, arranged or not, takes some time to develop the relationship. And I think that's where... the issue was with Travis just fitting into a new team and a new defense partner and high expectations, because when they got him at the draft, everybody goes, well, look at these four guys, they got one of the top four two sets in the league. And so there was a lot of pressure coming in here, but he's a really stand-up guy, as you guys know. He's a hard worker. He's one of those guys that you want on your team, and he's gotten better and better, and they've gotten more and more sort of comfortable together, and that can only mean good things for this hockey team.
George, before we had you on, we were talking about Chris Versteeg, who, of course, is out of the lineup. He's, of course, from nearby Lethbridge, Alberta, and, of course, he had the hip problem. He had surgery recently, and I know there's no timetable for his return right now, but is there still a chance that we're going to see Versteeg back in the Flames lineup before the regular season ends?
Well, he's wandering around the room now because nobody chirps like Chris Versteeg. They were complaining that the bench was really, really, really quiet, since he left, because he's one of those old-time guys that you just love. I mean, you could have thrown him back in the 80s and he'd have been right in his heyday, right up the old, right where he belonged. He's walking around there and he's rehabbing, and the crutches are gone, and I don't think he's going to go and, do a dance marathon anytime soon. But it sure looks like, he's making some progress. And he walks through there, and Chris, how's it going? It's better. And then he gives you that crazy little smile, and he's gone in the back. And that's basically all we know. So I think he's expecting it. I think they're expecting it. And, when he was injured, his presence on the power play was his loss in the presence on the power play was certainly felt. And he's just one of those guys around the room that just kind of picks everything up and makes everything better, one of those veteran presences. So I think they're certainly hoping, and I think they're certainly expecting to see him back, before the season's over.
George, we'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned him earlier in an answer. The hockey world and the journalism world lost Red Fisher yesterday. You've been around the game for a long time now. Any stories about Red that you can share with our audience?
Well, Red was, my second year covering this team. They went to the final and they played Montreal, right? And the Flames going to Montreal and, seeing all those great Canadians, going to the Forum, that was kind of me with Red Fisher, right? I mean, this is Red Fisher. I mean, this isn't just any other. This guy covered the Richard riots, for crying out loud. I mean, and the thing about Red and I didn't deal with him a ton. They played those two first, those finals in 86 and 89. And of course, the thing about Red that I remember was that he could be a really cranky guy, but if you were a young person trying to cover the game and you were diligent and you wanted to be better, Red Fisher would go out of his way to help you. I mean, if you wanted quotes or you tried to broker something to talk to a Canadiens player that maybe was being difficult, you'd go to Red Fisher. And of course, the great Red Fisher story as he got older was that he wouldn't talk to rookies. And, it wouldn't matter if, Connor McDavid, dropped out of the sky and put on a Canadiens jersey. He was a rookie. Red wasn't going to talk to him. So somebody, I think it was Kevin Paul DuPont of the Boston Globe, said that in memory of Red, all NHL beat guys should refuse to talk to rookies this weekend. And I think that would be very fitting for Red.
George Johnson covers the Calgary Flames for the Flames website. George, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you.
Do it again soon. Thanks, George. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Big thank you to George Johnson for joining us. George, of course, is a good friend of the program. He covers the Flames. In case you missed any of the interview, any of the other interviews we've had for you on this Saturday morning, the show will be available for download from our website, illegalcurve.com. And of course, you can subscribe and get it sent to your device each and every week, available wherever your best podcasts are found. George is the man.
Best of the best.
Best of the best. Yep. George is a great guy. We love George. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. It's a busy weekend for the Winnipeg Jets, of course, in addition to this afternoon's contest in Calgary, presented as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day. The Jets will be home tomorrow night against the Vancouver Canucks, a 7 p.m. puck drop against the Canucks. Both teams on a back-to-back, but it's a tighter one for the Canucks as they play late tonight in Edmonton, then have to travel here to Winnipeg. So they won't be arriving into Winnipeg until the wee hours of the morning, whereas the Jets should be back at a much more reasonable time this evening. tomorrow's game against the Canucks, I mean, we know about the struggles of the Vancouver Canucks. It's a game that the Jets should have, assuming they play to an appropriate level of their abilities.
Yeah, and the Jets have already beat the Canucks, of course, this year.
Twice so far this year.
Yeah, that's right, Drew. And, you know, you talk about the Canucks, and I think all three of us, and including Rory, let's say all four of us, you know, expected the Canucks not to be a playoff team this year, and we know that they're in the middle of a rebuild. Whether they want to call it a rebuild, that's what's happening right now. It's a very young team, and you know, we've talked to Kevin Woodley about this before, and we'll talk to Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province coming up about Brock Besser. But really, for me, it's all about the future. And you know, we've talked about, you know, a guy like Jake Virtanen, you know, who's had varying degrees of success so far early on in his NHL career, a former top 10 pick of the Canucks. And for me, it's really more so about that. I mean, they're not making the playoffs this year.
No,
I mean, they're a bottom five team in the NHL, but they still have a lot of talent. Whenever you have the Sedins, and they've still got Thomas Vanek for now, he's probably going to get moved before the trade deadline, but a lot of scoring power there. But it's just, once you go down the lineup, Sven Berchi, I should mention, another pretty good player. They just don't have that depth scoring, and they're just not a very good defensive team. And for me, you know, Jacob Markstrom's a good goaltender. But overall, I mean, this is a young roster that you knew, Dave, wasn't going to be very good this year. And, you know, sure, they had a good start to the season, but certainly, you know, in the last 3 or 4 weeks, they haven't been good.
Yeah, for a team like the Canucks they're just really sort of don't have the requisite amount of talent to compete at an NHL level. When you add injuries into that, it really becomes difficult. Bo Horvat, of course, has been out of the lineup with a fractured ankle. He's a game-time decision against the Jets tomorrow evening. So he's not going to play for the Canucks tonight in Edmonton, but he might return to the Canucks lineup in Winnipeg tomorrow night, which certainly would be a boon to the Canucks lineup. I mean, it's too little too late at this point in time in terms of the season, but you certainly want to get another talented player back in your lineup. So we'll see tomorrow. Obviously, won't be an availability for the Canucks or the Jets tomorrow, as it is the back-to-back situation. But it'll be interesting to see if they can get Bo Horvat back into the lineup. And it'll be interesting. It'll be a bit of an interesting dynamic at Bell MTS Place tomorrow night, as, of course, the Vikings are going to be in action at the exact same time as the Jets are against the Canucks. I think a lot of people are going to be keeping an eye on what's going on in the NFC Championship game.
So there's no way you're coming to the game tomorrow?
I'm actually doing pre and post tomorrow. So if you ever wanted to hear somebody with Kevin O doing radio while curled up in the fetal position for 3 hours, that'll be me tomorrow evening.
When they randomly play Skull Viking in the at Bell MTS Place, you and Blake Wheeler will both be doing it on the bench?
We'll both be clapping along. Do you see the Viking sent out a tweet sort of saluting Wheeler and thanking?
Well, not saluting. Wheeler spoke.
Wheeler spoke in it, yes, and thanking Winnipeg fans for the support of the Vikings.
So I think they were thanking you, Drew.
Me personally?
Well, they heard our interview last week with Pulled Goalie and
Mike Greenlay,
Mike Greenlay. And as a result, they said, "We know we got to thank Drew Mandel."
They're very kind of in that manner, aren't they?
By the way, Drew, you washed that shirt since last week.
I did. I washed the shirt.
Because, you know, for those who aren't in the studio, Drew is wearing the exact same shirt as last week. And I imagine you're wearing it because of good luck.
That's right. I'm wearing the same Viking shirt I wore last Saturday.
Same undies as well?
No, different underwear altogether. Okay. But everything has been washed. No underwear, in fact, this week is what I'm doing.
A thin layer of Gabardine.
You've got to go commando. It's
exactly.
The way to go.
But no, I've washed everything. We're all clean. We're all ready for tomorrow evening's Jets-Canucks game, and of course the Vikings and the Eagles tomorrow, a game you can watch on CTV. When we come back, Ed Willis joins us of the Vancouver Sun. He's covering the Canucks in Edmonton tonight. He'll be on his way to Winnipeg for the Jets and the Canucks tomorrow evening. He joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Third hour of the Legal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberger with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend from the Vancouver province. He covers the Vancouver Canucks. Ed Willis joins us on the line. Ed, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem, guys. How are you doing?
Doing very well. How's Edmonton on this Saturday morning?
Well, it's balmy is what it is. I was, you know, like now that I've moved out to the West Coast, I've developed an intolerance for cold weather, so it's good that it's kind of hovering right around zero. There isn't a lot of snow, so yeah, it's all good.
Ed, we just had George Johnson on. What's your favorite George Johnson story?
Oh, geez, my favorite George Johnson story. So there's none that pop to mind off the top of my head. We covered several Olympics together, and I do recall, you know, sort of the longer the Olympic schedule went, the shorter George's patience got. That's kind of the one that's nothing specific, but that's kind of the one that stands out for me.
George, you're with the Canucks in Edmonton, as those two teams are going to do battle in an epic battle of Western Conference also-rans later on tonight. You know, the Canucks, I mean, nobody really expected the Canucks to be a playoff team this year, so the fact they're, you know, towards the bottom of the Western Conference isn't a shock. But what is the team, you know, playing for over the remaining 37 games of the season? What's the goal of the team going forward for this year?
Yeah, well, this is kind of the narrative around the Canucks these days. Back on December 5th, they were 14-10-4, and actually above the playoff bar. That was they beat Carolina 3-0 that night, but it was also the night Bo Horvat fractured a bone in his foot. He went out. They went 2-11-2 over their next 15 games and then just plummeted. But in addition to that, they were without Brandon Sutter. Chris Tanev was in out of the lineup. Sven Berchi was gone. And they lost Derek Dorsett, who had to retire because of a neck problem. So the story is, you know, is that a representative of what the Canucks were those first 28 games of the season? When they really had something going with, you know, a four-line attack, balance in the lineup, you know, three defensemen. They played an up-tempo game under Travis Green. It looked like they turned a bit of a corner. So Horvat probably gets back into the lineup, not tonight, but Sunday in Winnipeg. And I think what the Canucks want to see, you know, can they get back to that game? Because that's an encouraging sign and, you know, sort of an indication that the plan, such as it is working here.
You know, Ed, I wanted to ask you about Brandon Sutter. He recently scored the overtime winner for the Canucks over the Minnesota Wild, and he's a guy that's had, obviously, the injury problems this year. What's the future for Brandon Sutter with the Canucks?
Well, I'm not sure where he's at contractually. I know he's overpaid, but he's kind of an important player for the Canucks because he plays the shutdown role. You know, in addition what they were losing, you know, in Horvat and Sutter, they were also 1-2 in Canucks among forwards in ice time. So, you know, that's like just a huge chunk of the lineup to do without. So, you know, I'm not sure what his future is going forward. He's been kind of a disappointment, but this year he had found a role, you know, has that shutdown centerman, but before he got hurt. So again, you know, he's kind of fits into this, you know, larger storyline of what is this team really like, and you know, does that fit him, and can he be an effective NHLer playing that role?
And are you surprised that the Aquilinis are going to allow general manager Jim Benning to go to the end of the season without giving him a new contract? And do you anticipate him still remaining the GM after the season?
Yeah, that's kind of the other big question. So back in mid-November, when things were going fairly well for the Canucks, Francesco Aquilini got on the rights holder radio station and said he liked the job Jim was doing and didn't think there'd be a problem extending him. So everybody seemed to take him at his word. But here we are 2 months later, no extension. And, you know, that kind of speaks volumes. If it was going to get done, it should have been done by now. So, you know, it's hard. The Canucks, 28th 2 years ago, 29th last year. They're about 26th right now. The brand has taken such a beating in Canucks in Vancouver over these last 3 years. So unless something dramatic happens here, like, you know, they do catch a bit of a spark with Horvat back in the lineup, I'm just not sure how the status quo maintains. They've got to do something to, you know, rebuild consumer confidence. to rebuild some confidence in the brand, and that likely means bringing in a new GM.
Ed Willis is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ed covers the Vancouver Canucks for the Vancouver Province. Ed, you mentioned a new general manager. Is that going to be local boy Ken Holland? He's so tied into the Detroit Red Wings organization, it's hard to believe he's going to be the head man anywhere other than Detroit, but we know that his name has been bandied about as of late.
Yeah, and again, that's just kind of putting two and two together. Another guy in the last year of his contract who hasn't been extended. Things have changed in Detroit since Mike Ilitch died. Given his track record there, if Holland was going to be extended, it should have been done by now. So, the other issue there is he will be very much in demand, if he does hit the market. So, BC kid, he maintains a home in the Okanagan over the summer. If you believe in this, this idea that the Canucks have to do something to restore consumer confidence, to, restore faith in the brand, I think Ken Holland goes a long way towards doing that.
Ed, I know we've asked you about this many times over the years, but the Sedins are in the last year of their contracts. I think you knew this question was coming. Being pending UFAs in the summer, is the expectation that both Sedins are going to sign short-term contracts, or is it possible this is their last NHL year?
No, the expectation is they'll sign short-term contracts. Both Trevor Linden and Benning are on record as saying, they're Canucks as long as they want to be, and they've shown no sign that they want out or that they're dead, they're done as Canucks, or they want to chase the Stanley Cup. And again, fitting into that, the larger story we talked about at the outset, when Horvat was in the lineup, he took up first line minutes. That left Daniel and Henrik basically playing a third line role, but also getting a much more favorable matchup. And they were effective players in that limited role. They gave them, a real offensive source from the third line. So, I think management wants to see that kind of formation I'm not sure what the word is, but again, the Sedins playing that third line role, if they can return to that, they can't carry the offense like they used to. Not even close, but they can still be effective players. And I think that's something we're going to find out over the next 2-3 months.
Ed, here in Winnipeg, we see the advantage of the Jets and the Manitoba Moose, their AHL affiliate, being in close proximity. The Canucks AHL affiliate, the Utica Comets, are, as far from the Canucks as possible. I mean, I guess it could be in Florida, so it'd be a little bit farther. But has there been ever any talk to move the AHL club a little bit? I know originally there was some talk about moving them into BC. Has there been any more talk about that, or are they happy being with their AHL franchise being out in New York?
Yeah, I think they're reasonably happy with that. When they moved out there, there was a lot of talk about moving into Abbotsford, and the Calgary Flames had struck this sweetheart lease deal with the city of Abbotsford in the rink there, and that was a bit of a roadblock there. Yes, they are far away, but again, from the organization's point of view, they get out to Utica, and they can drive there to so many spots in the AHL, whether it's Glens Falls, wherever it happens to be, that's kind of that sort of western upper New York area is the center of so many teams. So, they've got the operations of themselves. They can do pretty much what they want to. Is it the most convenient place? No, absolutely not. But they like a lot of things about the arrangement.
Ed Willis is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ed covers the Vancouver Canucks for the Vancouver Province. Ed, the trade deadline is approaching at the end of February, and the Canucks certainly would be considered sellers as they approach the deadline. One interesting name, of course, is Thomas Vanek, and everybody around the NHL is used to Thomas Vanek being traded at the trade deadline. But because he's so, let's say, inconsistent, the return that teams get for Vanek is usually pretty muted. Maybe a third-round pick, maybe a fourth-round pick. If you're a Canucks lineup and you're sort of bereft of talent, might you be better off re-signing Vanek to play for your team next season rather than trade him this year and really only acquire a third or fourth round selection?
Yeah, if that's what the market holds, I can certainly see this. I'll have a better idea about that answer in about an hour when I sit down with Jim Benning, and because I, you know, it's one of the questions I want to ask him. He is, and for a team, I think you touched on it there, for a team that doesn't have a lot of entertainment value, Banik is wildly entertaining. You just never know. He does things that players just don't do with the puck anymore. And he has been productive, too. The one thing I'd say is, you know, in the right situation, if you bring him in and, you know, you're not expecting him, you know, to be a top six forward, but you're expecting him to provide an offensive spark with limited ice time, you know, he's your guy because he can definitely do that. And I'm just wondering if somebody, you know, some a contending team who looks at their lineup and going, geez, you know, if we could just get a couple more goals or we could just get a little more offense, you know, they might be willing to pay a little bigger price. The other guy for the Canucks, of course, is Eric Goodbranson, completely different type of player. And again, you wonder about, you know, his marketability, but he's another guy who will definitely be, you know, in the conversation as the trade deadline gets closer.
Ed, we have just one final question for you, and I saw you tweeting about this yesterday. Obviously, the saddest news of the week was, of course, Red Fisher passing away, and I'm sure that you saw Michael Farber's article in the Montreal Gazette. I guess, would you be able to just share some of your favorite memories of Red Fisher and maybe the influence that he had on you as a sports journalist?
Well, I think for anybody who came up about the time I did, he was the dean of hockey writers. He was the dean of hockey writers 30 years before I started in the business. My first year covering the NHL was 89-90. Red had already been covered in the league 35 years by then, which just blows my mind. For some reason, and I don't know why, he was always really good with me because he could be kind of standoffish, especially, you know, for newer guys. And I actually worked a year in the Montreal market, and I'd been in the business 10 years by then and, you know, traveled with the Jets. So, you know, I'd gotten to know him, but I found him to be, despite, you know, so many people wrote, you know, he could be cantankerous, he could be, you know, he could be standoffish, he could be all those things. I never found him to be that way. And the other thing I want to say is just, you know, when people get to legendary status, other people forget how they became legends. And Red at his best is not only the best hockey writer this country, he's among the best writers, period, this country has ever produced. And I would love to get sort of a collection of his greatest hits because there's a couple that stand out. And the one that I tweeted about was him going to visit Toe Blake when Blake had Alzheimer's, and I believe he went with Ken Reardon, the old Canadiens GM. And it's just an incredible piece. He wrote one about Doug Wickenheiser and his fight with cancer, and about Bob Gainey and his daughter, who lost his daughter in a boating accident. It wasn't a boating accident. It was on the ocean. Mm-hmm. But he had a touch and an ability to write these stories in such a human manner, that's what I remember most about Red. When I did my WHA book, I talked to him, and he told me a story about Doug Harvey. He was kind of a dark soul. He had a massive drinking problem, and he'd fall on and off the wagon. But Red told me a story about Doug Harvey picking him up one day. Dude, so where are we going, Doug? And they went up to the Laurentians, and there was a boys' camp, and they spent the day painting the cabins at this boys' camp. So there are a lot of layers to Red, and, you know, he'll be missed, but his work will live on.
Ed Willis covers the Vancouver Canucks for the Vancouver Province. Well said there, Ed. Are you coming to Winnipeg tomorrow?
Oh, wouldn't miss it. I only do the big games, Edmonton and Winnipeg.
Attaboy. Eagles or Vikings tomorrow?
I am so invested in the Vikings, it's embarrassing. It's, you know, I wrote about that this week, too. I think the Vikings are kind of every Canadian's, if not their favorite team, their second favorite team.
Yeah.
And I think it goes right back to Bud Grant and Joe Capp. So, yeah, I'd like to see it. It's funny, I was talking, but Vanek lives in Minnesota. He went to the University of Minnesota and stayed there. And Brock Besser, of course, is from just outside the Twin Cities. So I talked to them yesterday about how excited they are. And got some pretty good stuff from them.
Yeah, we have, and I don't know if you've seen the clip, but the last Saturday when the Jets were in St. Paul to play the Wild, Blake Wheeler joined in on the skull clap with the fans in Minnesota.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome. I really did. And the Canucks were playing in Minnesota,
right,
in St. Paul that night, and there was in the concourse they had the game on the giant screen, and there was this massive roar, and it was just as the game was starting, and you could see Besser reach over the boards and then tap the boards with his stick when Diggs scored that touchdown. So, yeah, it's really looking forward to this one.
We'll see you tomorrow, Ed. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Okay, guys. Yeah.
Take care.
Cheers, Ed.
Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province joining us on the program. When we come back, we discuss the New York Islanders and their dilemma with John Tavares. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. I'm a dirty rotten liar. We'll talk about John Tavares coming up at 10:45. We'll talk about Freddie Anderson this segment and how he called out his Maple Leafs teammates following their loss on Thursday to the Philadelphia Flyers. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, he's been playing all week to packed houses. Pete Johansson in town, two shows, tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. And coming up at the end of the month, next week, in fact, Kate Quigley again, going to be in town at Rumors. You know her from TV's Playboy channel. She's a fantastic...
Do I ever, Drew?
Oh, boy. Let's hope your wife isn't listening.
She's a fantastic comedian. I do highly recommend you check out Kate Quigley next week at Rumors. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Freddie Anderson had some harsh words for his Maple Leafs teammates after that loss this week against the Philadelphia Flyers. Here's what Freddie Anderson had to say post-game.
Where do you go from here as the team gets ready to play Ottawa in 48 hours and get better?
You got to regroup. You got to... I think we got to figure out who wants to commit to playing for the team. I think we have a few days now to the next game or one day in between. But we got to come with a different attitude. We played well in the two periods, and I think we got to find a way to keep the foot on the gas the whole game. You can't be satisfied at 2-0.
Frustrating for you, Fred, to see a 2-on-1 come down when you guys are on the power play?
Yeah, I think. A lot of guys on the bench too. Pretty frustrating not being on the power play, and seeing that kind of effort. I think we look each other. We got to look each other in the eyes here and determine where we want to go from here.
Do you feel it's mental then for the team in some ways? Or?
Yeah, I mean it's not. I don't think we're tired. I think it's a lack of effort at certain points, and it's something that can't happen. We gotta figure this out, and if we want to play any meaningful hockey later, we'll figure it out.
You guys are still picking up points and remain in a very comfortable position in the standings, but it sounds like there's a sense of urgency in your voice. How important is it to kind of turn this around soon?
Yeah, I mean, we're sitting pretty good. I think we got it pretty comfortable, but there can't be any reason for not playing the right way, because we gotta be ready when it comes to pass play, all-star break here, and it's going to be a lot more tougher for everyone. They're trying to... Team's trying to catch us, and we can't slide like this.
Maple Leafs had a 2-0 third period lead against the Flyers. Things started to go badly when the Flyers pickpocketed Mitch Marner, directly leading to a goal. And then while on the power play, the Flyers had a 2-on-1 opportunity that they capitalized on, making it 2-all, ending up winning in overtime. So the Leafs get the point, but it was, you know, a game they had in hand, and they blew it yet again. Your thoughts on Freddie Anderson's comments? I know Jeff O'Neill was critical of them, saying he shouldn't have said them to the media. Your thoughts on if Freddie Anderson stepped over over the line with his comments.
Yeah, and the O-Dog obviously knows what he's talking about, friend of the program. But, I mean, you look at the last nine games or so, Drew, and I believe they only have two wins in regulation, if I'm not mistaken. Pardon me, two wins, period. Both of those actually were in a shootout. So they actually don't have any regulation wins, if I'm not mistaken, in the last nine games.
Their last regulation win came December 28th.
Right.
So they have not yet – they have not won in the new year in regulation.
Right, so I think,
and they've lost seven of their last nine overall. So they got a couple, like you said, right, wins in overtime or in the
so
shootout.
They're 2-4-3, if I'm not mistaken, in their last nine games. So they're struggling a little bit, mm-hmm. but we've talked about it here the last couple of weeks on the Saturday show and the NHL This Week show. They're locked into a playoff position. They're most likely – no, they're going to play Boston in the first round of the playoffs, second and third in the Atlantic Division. So, but Freddie Anderson's comments, I mean, they're definitely a little bit unexpected. But listen, Freddie Anderson is the number one goalie of this team. He's a veteran goalie in this league. He's a leader of this team. He wasn't happy with the way that game ended, and why would he be? The Leafs are up 2-0 on the Flyers late in that game, and the Flyers are playing some good hockey as well. They're a desperate team. They're trying to stay relevant in the Eastern Conference playoff race. But let's be honest, it was blown coverage that led to that 2-on-1 in overtime, and that's been happening too much for the Leafs. I mean, this Leafs team, I mean, it's not a fantastic defensive team, but I mean, you've still got, you know, Morgan Rielly there, good defenseman Jake Gardner, and, you know, Zaitsev's out of the lineup right now. But I mean, I think for the most part, it's just a lack of discipline and structure in their game. And I think, you know, he's just kind of venting a little bit there. And sure, you know, you'd maybe like to keep that within the dressing room, but we know, guys, that hockey's an emotional game, and you know, we saw that there from Anderson.
Five regulation wins for the Maple Leafs in their last 20 games. So again,
yeah,
that's
not good.
No, they've been getting they've been taking games to overtime, and they've been winning some there. But in the first 60 minutes of the game, we're really where it matters most, and that's what matters in the playoffs. They have not been able to do anything in the first 60 minutes of contests.
And guys, if the playoffs started today, the Leafs would be limping in.
They'd be limping in against the Boston Bruins team that certainly is anything but limping in. Here's what Craig Button, TSN director of Scouting, had to say in response to Freddie Anderson's comments.
Wow, a lot of the Maple Leaf players right now are probably walking on eggshells. You might even say some coaches, but not Frederick Anderson. He's not holding back here, sort of calling out his team, calling out the effort as well. What do you make of these comments, Craig?
Well, I think it's real strong by Frederick Anderson, and you got to love it because you take ownership, and too much of the time, oh yeah, we tried hard. He said lack of effort. That's a big indictment against the team, and he said at certain stretches. He says they're sitting comfortably. Do you know why they're sitting comfortably? Not because of their own good play, but they play in the worst division in the National Hockey League, and nobody's going to threaten them there. So unless they clean up their game, he's exactly right. They will not be playing meaningful games. They will get dispatched real quickly because there's too many areas of their game where they don't know how to lock down. And I'm not talking about playing defensive. I'm talking about playing with a sense of determination and a sense of you're not going to beat me to that puck. I'm going to be better with the puck than the next guy, and everybody's going to follow that. And that's what you have to do. They don't have that in their game. You look at the last two overtime losses, Marner on Tuesday night, Nylander this night. Skill doesn't win you games without the will. Those two guys cost in the last two games.
Hard to believe that. Just
Craig Button, you know, backing up what Freddie Anderson saying, you know, giving a wake-up call to some of the young Leafs players with his comments.
Yeah, I agree with Craig Button. And you know, they're leaving points on the board here. I mean, these are extra points that the Leafs could use. Regardless, Drew, if they're locked into a playoff spot right now, you want to be going into the playoffs playing the right way. And sure, they've still got a lot of hockey left here, 35, 36 games left on the Leafs season. But this last little stretch of 10 to 15 games, you mentioned it, only five regulation wins in the last 20. They've got to start to play better.
Mason Appleton of the Manitoba Moose is going to join us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290 as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Drew Mindell, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. It's a doubleheader of game days here on the station as we have both the Jets and the Flames, followed by the Manitoba Moose in action against the Texas Stars later on tonight. 7 p.m. puck drop at Bell MTS Place. The game gets underway at 6:45 with Mitch Peacock on the call. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now,
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Manitoba Moose, we are pleased to welcome to the program Mason Appleton. Mason, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Mason. It's been overall a good season for the Manitoba Moose, as you guys were right atop the AHL standings until a recent skid. I believe you've fallen in four of your past five contests. How do you get back on the winning track as of late, and you know what does the team need to do to find their winning ways yet again?
I think we've got to reset a little bit. You know, when you're losing, it can kind of take a toll on you mentally. So I think we need to just get back to, enjoying the game and doing the things that we were doing when we were winning. And also, I think we're really, really banged up team right now physically. So getting healthy is going to be really important to, contribute to our success and find those winning ways again.
Mason, we want to talk to you more about your great rookie season thus far with the Manitoba Moose, but I want to go back to last July. What was it like signing your first pro contract with the Winnipeg Jets after 2 years with Michigan State?
Yeah, it was awesome, obviously, signing my first contract, but for me, I wasn't sure if I wanted to turn pro or stay in college another year, so it was a long, hard decision that I made with my family, but you know, now I really feel that I made the right decision, and I like where my game's going and how I've been playing so far this season.
You know, Mason, one thing people don't take into account when players transition from college to the professional ranks is the number of games you're playing and the increase in the number of games. You've already eclipsed the number you played last year, which was 35 with Michigan State. You've played 40 now for the Moose. How are you finding that transition and the conditioning that it requires to play at this professional level?
It's definitely a little different. It almost reminds me of juniors a little bit again. But, in pro hockey, it's all hockey. Where in college, there were a lot of different things you had to balance. So I know the schedule is a lot harder here. But, you know, for me, it hasn't been too hard. You know, I've been keeping up with my body and doing all those things to try to stay as healthy as possible. So for me, within these next 30 games, it's going to definitely be a test because I've never experienced playing this many. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping my body will hold up for it.
Mason Appleton is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mason having a very impressive rookie season for the Manitoba Moose. And Mason, I don't want to say that the transition from college hockey to pro hockey has been easy for you, because that's not for me to say, certainly. But, you know, are you surprised at the level of performance you've been able to put up with the Manitoba Moose thus far this season?
Maybe a little bit. I know success comes a lot with opportunity, and for me here, I've been given some good opportunities. I think I've earned all of them, so I've been able to play with really skilled guys and produce with them. So I like where my game's going, and I like even how I started the year. So for me, I got to just keep trending in the right direction, and even though I'm playing well, I can keep definitely making strides and getting better.
Mason, Jack Roslovic is obviously up with the Jets now. He was recalled yesterday. What kind of influence has Roslovic had on you as a teammate and coming from that same draft year, being a fellow countryman as well?
Yeah, he's definitely had a lot of influence on me, especially when I've been playing with him the last month or two. I learned a lot from him, how he plays with the puck, he plays without the puck. He does a lot of things that go unnoticed too on the ice. So, for me, he's definitely a good person to lean on and take notes on, and definitely been talking to him about, how to stay healthy and how to sustain that level of play for, 60, 70 games. So, yeah, he's definitely a guy that I've, had some conversations with on those types of things.
You know, Mason, whenever I've talked to Coach Vincent, he talked initially in the season about how they didn't have any expectations. They didn't have a ceiling for you. They didn't really have a plan in terms of what exactly how you would produce, because, of course, it's an unknown quantity when you're switching from college to professional ranks. But we've really seen you rise with the opportunity, and sure, like you said, you haven't just been given it. You've earned your time to be moved up to the top line, play with Nick Patan, play with Jack Roslovic or Chase DeLeo, as the case may be. Just how nice is it from your perspective in your first year of professional hockey, hearing that your coach has confidence in you and gives you that chance to play on that top line?
Yeah, it's great, honestly. Like you said, how he didn't have many expectations, and that's kind of, I think, how a lot of guys are, because you don't really know what they're going to be their first year. And for me, ever since training camp, I came to work, and every day I try to get better. And obviously that's a big part of pro hockey, and that's how you get to the NHL. But I really like how, he trusts me and puts me in different situations. So I think we have a good relationship too. So I think it's just going to continue to grow. And as I get better and better, hopefully I continue to keep earning those opportunities that I'm getting.
Mason Appleton is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mason, in addition to being team MVP in your second season at Michigan State, you were also an academic All-Big Ten selection. You know, you talk about the cerebral aspect to the game of hockey and sort of the way you think and process the game. Is that one of your biggest attributes from your perspective, sort of the mental side of the game?
Yeah, definitely. For me, you know, I use my feet and skill to make some plays, but I think having a good hockey brain and, you know, letting that take over and make the big plays and, you know, relying on your brain in all areas of the ice, defensively, offensively, and even in the neutral zone. So it makes things easier and makes things second nature almost. So, yeah, definitely having a good hockey brain is one of my biggest attributes.
Mason, back in November, you were named AHL Player of the Week. What does that mean to you? Is that something that, you know, you take a lot of pride in? I imagine you take some pride in it, but first year in the American Hockey League as a rookie, you're having a great year, as we talked about, but to have that honor and have the Moose playing so well here in the first half of the season or so.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's an honor, but I think it spoke more to how our team was playing at the time. You know, we were scoring goals in bunches, and we were playing really well, and you know, even that, and then after I won that award, you know, other guys on the team started winning it too. So, yeah, I'd love to get back to having guys winning those awards and, you know, winning those hockey games like we were. So, yeah, like I talked about, we've got some things to change right now, but, you know, when we get healthy, hopefully that's what we get back to.
Amazing. You've played center, you've played right wing, you've played left wing. And, you know, which position do you prefer if you had your choice?
Honestly, I don't prefer any. Over the past 2 or 3 years now, I've played so much of everyone that you know, it's easy for me to transition from one to the other. So honestly, wherever I'm needed and wherever I can play is where I want to be.
Well, you got to be careful though, because yesterday we saw Tucker Poolman switch from defense to forward. So now defensively, you guys seem to be fine, but you could always be asked by Coach Vincent to switch back to defense. How would you like that?
That is true. I don't know about that. That probably wouldn't work too well.
Mason Appleton, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mason, your coach at Michigan State is former Winnipeg Jets 1.0 member Danton Cole. You know, how much influence did Danton Cole have on your career? You spent 2 years, obviously, at Michigan State. And when you were drafted by the Jets in your second year of eligibility, you know, what was Danton Cole able to tell you about Winnipeg?
Well, I actually didn't have him as my coach. This is his first year. So I just got to know him a little bit over summer, and then, you know, we talked a lot about me turning pro or me staying at school, but, you know, he was really supportive with whatever I decided to do, and that was obviously a really tough phone call for me to make to, you know, let him know that I was turning pro. But, yeah, I wish him and them all the best of luck, and, you know, I'm sure I'll see him over summer at pro camp and those types of things, so I look forward to that.
Mason, you're, of course, from Green Bay, Wisconsin, so I assume that you're a cheesehead and a big Packers fan. With the big game coming up tomorrow between the Vikings and the Eagles, are you hoping for the Vikings, or are you maybe hoping for the Eagles because of your allegiance to the Packers nation?
Oh, definitely hoping for the Eagles. I never like seeing the Vikings win.
You know, there's a captain on the Winnipeg Jets who might not like to hear that.
Yeah, it's true. But, yeah, definitely a big Packers fan, so I don't like seeing any of the other NFC North teams win it.
And I guess Buddy Robinson will be happy that you're going along with his Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, he's a big Eagles fan, so I'll be cheering with him.
You know, Mason, that it does kind of beg a question, though. If you know, we're talking about you right now with the Manitoba Moose, but of course the goal for you would be to be up with the Jets one day. Now, how are you as a Michigan State Spartan going to be with all those Wolverines around you? You've got Andrew Kopp, Jacob Trouba, and Kyle Connor. So is that going to create a bit of a rivalry with the Michigan State Wolverines situation?
Yeah, it might. I don't know. You never know. That was obviously one of the funnest rivalries in sports, so I love being a part of that. But, you know, I think if I'm on the same team with those guys, then I can put that aside.
Mason, we'll let you go on this last question. You were drafted 168th overall in the sixth round by the Jets back in 2015. That was your second year of draft eligibility. You know, as a late-round pick who was looked over that first year of eligibility, do you sort of use that as a motivating factor, you know, that you know, to prove people wrong that, you know, you're more than your draft position was? I mean, you've proven to be a late-round steal thus far for the organization, given your performance with the Moose this season. Do you use that as a motivating factor?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I always look back and say when that draft was, I was a much different player, much different person. So, yeah, I kind of take that with a grain of salt where I was drafted almost and use it as motivation. Obviously, I was honored to be drafted wherever I was, but like you said, 168th. That means there's a lot of people ahead of you. So, you know, every day I'm working hard to pass those guys by, and just going to keep on my path and keep doing those things that make me successful.
Mason Appleton is a member of the Manitoba Moose. The Moose in action tonight against the Texas Stars, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Mason, appreciate your time this morning. Best of luck tonight and best of luck for the remainder of the season.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Mason. When we come back, we discuss the Islanders and John Tavares, and maybe we got another story about our boy Ezzy. We'll see. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Mason Appleton for just joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, in case you missed any of the show, it's going to be available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com, or subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Have it sent to your device automatically each and every week. It's just that simple. I want to give a quick shout out to some first responders and to some real good Samaritans. My wife and kids were involved in a minor car accident yesterday. Everybody's fine, but you know, some people came to their aid on Cordon Avenue when the incident happened, and you know, were kind enough to welcome my wife and kids into their house just to, you know, get things settled down and everything. And then the first responders who came on scene just to, you know, make sure everything was okay. Everybody, you know, just precautionary. Just want to thank everybody for that and give them, you know, the kudos for their professionalism and the way in which the entire situation was handled. Like I said, everybody's fine, you know, but it is nice that there's still some good Samaritans and everything else helping you out on a day-to-day basis.
And that's the most important thing, that Laura and your kids are okay. As you mentioned, it was a minor crash, no one hurt.
Yeah.
This time of year, it's pretty scary out there with the driving conditions. But again, yeah, you know, safety is the most important.
And that's right.
Safety everybody's
first.
Good, so that's great.
Safety first, everyone. But anyways, yeah, appreciate the help that people provided to my wife and kids and family and everything else. One final segment on this Saturday morning. You know, John Tavares, he's a fascinating case in that he's going to be an unrestricted free agent at season's end for the New York
Islanders.
Why isn't
anyone talking about Tavares for the Hart Trophy?
Well, because the Islanders aren't in a playoff spot right now.
He's having a great year, though.
Yeah. Him and Barzal look like...
And Josh Bailey.
And Josh Bailey has been fantastic as well. You know, the thought of the idea of breaking up Barzal and Tavares right now at season's end, which is quite potentially could happen, is sort of a shame given how much beautiful magic they've been making together on that Islanders team. And sure, they don't necessarily play with each other all the time, but... You know, if you're Tavares and you're the Islanders and you're watching your team fall out of the playoff spot right now, and they're still in the running, but they're, you know, 3 points out in the very competitive Metropolitan Division in the Eastern Conference, and you see your team and you see your goaltending has been absolutely atrocious this year, if you're Garth Snow, how do you handle the trade deadline? If you don't think there's a possibility of re-signing John Tavares, do you maybe do the unthinkable and trade him before the deadline? Do you try and get a goaltender to give your team a push to get into the playoffs? Do you try and add another piece that's more of a long-term piece to prove to him that you're going to be a competitive franchise moving forward? You know, Garth Snow is not your traditional general manager, I would suggest. But it's a real interesting dilemma that he's faced with in Long Island.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, the Islanders have been struggling a little bit as of late outside of a playoff spot. And I think if you're Garth Snow, guys, you have to be a buyer. I think you have to go for the playoffs. I mean, this is a team that had aspirations of being a playoff team this year. This isn't a rebuilding team or a team that's in a position where they can't acquire assets. But as far as John Tavares goes, Drew, I mean, he's the best bargain in the NHL right now at $5.5 million a year. I've said all along there's a good chance that he stays. I think he is going to stay, and I know that people are talking about John Tavares possibly being a $15 million player in his next contract. I don't know about that, but he's certainly going to be making probably $11 or $12 million a year. He's arguably a top three, top five center in the league. I think I would say he is a top three center, and I think a lot of people don't necessarily give him the credit because the Islanders aren't a playoff team right now, and the Islanders aren't a team maybe that gets as much exposure, for example, as the Rangers, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he's going anywhere. But as far as, you know, some of the other players on this team, I mean, you do have guys you know, that need new contracts. Josh Bailey is one of them. But the Islanders are going to re-sign Josh Bailey. I mean, Josh Bailey's having a great year. He's going to get paid. So, I mean, maybe you're going to move a guy like a Jason Chimera. But I just don't think this team is good enough defensively and in goal. And you mentioned, you know, Jaro Halak has not been good this year, and mm-hmm. Thomas Greiss is coming off of that unbelievable performance where he had something like 48, 49, 50 saves.
Against the Canadians, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, to me, Greiss is the better of the two goaltenders. You know, but aside from, you know, Johnny Boychuk, Nick Leddy, Calvin DeHaan, Ryan Pollock is obviously a good young defenseman from Manitoba. But, I mean, this defense isn't very good. I just think up and down this roster, they don't have enough depth. And, you know, you mentioned Matt Barzell, and we talked about, you know, Josh Bailey, and obviously Andrew Ladd is a staple of that second line, but Anders Lee is another guy you can throw in there. I just don't think they have enough secondary scoring right now, and again, the goaltending is below average, in my opinion, and so that equals, for me, a non-playoff team.
The $15 million price figure that we threw out came from Darren Dreger, who said that a hockey executive said to him that if Tavares hits unrestricted free agency, he could see a team giving him a seven-year, which is the max you can give to a free agent that's not your own, a seven-year contract worth $15 million per season. Is that outlandish? Is that outrageous? Or for a top five talent like John Tavares, that's just the natural progression?
I would say kudos to John Tavares' agent for getting that information to Darren Dreger to put that out there, because whether it's true or not true, I mean, that's, you know, it seems like an outlandish figure considering what Connor McDavid is making. You know, I mean, again, don't get me wrong, I'm not diminishing the talent that John Tavares has, but I mean, I don't know if he's worth that much more than Connor McDavid.
Different situations, though, in that course, Tavares is at the open market, and,
sure.
and McDavid wasn't.
Sure, of course. But I mean, you know, that's a big part of your salary cap. I mean, and we live in a salary cap era, and if you're going to throw $15 million at one player, I mean, you're gonna have to be a team that has a lot of room, because does John Tavares want to go to a team that has a lot of room?
Sure.
In theory, you know what I mean? Because generally, that means you're not spending it on talent right now, and so it would be, to me, I don't know if he's gonna want to go. He doesn't want to go into a similar situation.
He doesn't want to go to a rebuild.
He wants to win. I mean, he's a winner. I mean, and it's, you know, the New York Islanders with their new arena, and their practice facility is like looks like one of the nicest ones in the NHL. It looks incredible. And like I said, they're going to have this new arena.
New ownership.
So there seems to be a lot of reasons to stay, and you've got some up-and-coming talent. But I agree with Ezzy. Like, you know, you have to prove to this asset that it's worth staying.
What about Kiefer Bellows? I mean, Kiefer Bellows is an Islanders draft pick. He absolutely lit up the World Juniors, setting a record, you know, in Buffalo. So Kiefer Bellows is another guy. He's going to be in the NHL sooner rather than later, maybe as early as next year. We talked about Matt Barzell, Ryan Pollock. He's only going to get better. So lots of reasons to be optimistic. Josh Hosang is another guy.
That's an interesting asset. I don't know. They seem to be wasting him.
Josh Hosang?
Yeah, I'm not really sure what the Islanders are doing. I mean, we don't pay a lot of attention to the Islanders here, but like, I see that Josh Hosang situation, and I just don't understand. Like,
well, he was a guy who, when they drafted, they knew that he was a bit, what's the polite word of saying it, temperamental, let's say, and that sort of continued in his NHL career as he's bounced back and forth from Bridgeport to the Islanders and back again. And, you know, if you recall correctly, I think, wasn't he sent home from training camp early on in his career for violating some sort of rule? So he's certainly been the temperamental prospect.
It just
seems
that when they need guys to call up, like, he would be given that opportunity. Like I said, I just see from what people who cover the Islanders have been saying of late, and it just seems like it's an interesting situation there with Josh Hosang. So I don't know if they're going to maybe try and make a new move, change that kind of scenario for him, because maybe it's just not working out in Long Island.
There'll be
slash Brooklyn.
Slash Brooklyn, which is actually on Long Island, so you're allowed to say both.
There you go.
Well, it looks like there's a good chance as well that they play a handful of games at old Nassau County Coliseum next year.
Yeah, that's what they're talking about.
It's been renovated.
Yeah. It's obviously got a very low capacity in terms of crowd, but you know,
we were there back in 2011 for your bachelor party.
It's true. That was a long time ago now.
It's unbelievable.
I know. A lot of things have happened since then.
Great old barn.
You know, I've got two kids. You got a kid coming on the way. You know, things are happening, and unfortunately, Ezzy, you still don't know which washroom to use properly when you go to the washroom. You had an unfortunate incident walking into the women's washroom recently.
Yeah, you had to bring that up on air.
I did, yes.
Yeah. I told you that off air in confidence.
But we told you we were going to bring it up on air.
Yeah, so, you know, as many people know, I work in a commercial real estate office, and we moved buildings recently, and I was away on my honeymoon, and our office had been open for a couple weeks. And, you know, my second day in the new building, I accidentally went in the women's washroom.
Yeah, didn't notice.
Unknowingly.
Yeah, unknowingly is the important part.
And the whole office found out about
it. Of course they did. That's the important part as well, is that, you know, you continue to have escapades like nobody else. That's it for the Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to all of our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes, on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week.
Rick, you better get out of here quick because Rick Ralph is coming in.
Yeah, Rick Ralph is coming in and he's not going to stand in my way, indeed. Big props to producer Rory doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Rick are next here on TSN 1290.
Sit together, the team will be all right.